Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast, a podcast where we try to diagnose what's wrong with the Milwaukee Bucks. They lost. They've lost for the first time in 5.5 weeks. The Bucks lost on Monday night to the Dallas Mavericks. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast. And on the other line is Matt Velasquez, Bucks beat reporter covering the Milwaukee Bucks. He was there for the end of the Magic. The 18-game winning streak finally came to an end. A couple days before this big showdown with the Los Angeles Lakers, kind of a bummer, but obviously the Mavericks are a very good team as well. Playing, however, without Luka Doncic, their star 20-year-old who is sidelined with an injury, so the Bucks saw a shorthanded team but could not prevail, 120-116. Matt Velasquez, clearly the season is over. This is a huge setback for the Bucks, who now have four losses now on the season. It's terrible.
Yeah, just, you know, shut it down. Obviously, the Bucks aren't very good, right? Losing a game, like, that's unacceptable, right?
They gave up those three-pointers from, like, the logo in the middle of the court to Kristaps Porzingis. You can't do that. Got to play defense.
Yeah, I mean, I was told there was a way to defend a 7'3" guy shooting from 31 feet away. I was told that was stoppable, and obviously, they're just not trying hard enough. No, obviously, JR and I are kidding. We'll get into it more. But obviously, this Bucks team they're still pretty good.
Yes, this is true. They did have to slog through this Mavericks game to a degree, but Kristaps Porzingis was very good, and ultimately Dallas built a lead that appeared to be pretty insurmountable. I turned it off with 2 minutes to go when it was a 14-point game. Somehow there was drama at the end, and it was a 4-point game with a little bit of time left on the clock. But Dallas was able to salt it away. Do you consider it an off night for the Bucks? I mean, Giannis scored 48 points and was unstoppable. And I know they're down Eric Bledsoe, who has missed this game and will miss a couple more with injury. Yeah, do you see it as an off night, or just Dallas? You know, Dallas came to play. They were ready for this.
In my best imitation of Mike Budenholzer possible, I think it was a little bit of both. You look at the Bucks, and unquestionably they had a bad night. It was a rare stinker. They didn't really do much of anything well. Yes, Giannis had 48 points and 14 rebounds, and he shot well from the floor, but like there wasn't much else outside of that. And he even admitted after the game that he didn't think he played very well on defense, that he needs to get better on defense. He said, a lot better on defense. You look up and down the roster, and there weren't a ton of contributions. Like, until that late flurry that they had as the Mavs kind of, like, sleptwalked and tried to, like, close out the game. I mean, they're up 11 with 40 seconds left. And the Bucks were like still trying, and the Mavs were out there basically like, come on, guys, like, just stop. And the Bucks kept trying. But until that point, the Bucks had two guys in double figures. It was Giannis and it was Kyle Korver with 17. He had a great night after struggling for a decent amount of the win streak, really. Like, over the past month, he hasn't necessarily been great. But he was awesome. Coming off the bench, he was a huge reason why they were even in that game. But you put together the Bucks starters, and they were 9 of 34 with 23 points outside of Giannis. Like, that's not gonna do it. Obviously, fans like to point to, oh, this player was underperforming, or this player was underperforming, or this player, obviously, like, if they play like this, the Bucks can't win. That was like so many players. Like, you can't just point to one guy. You can't be like, hey, it was Chris Middleton. It's like, well, what about Brooke Lopez? He wasn't great. Say, oh, well, Dante DiVincenzo, like, he was pretty good, but, like, he just needs to score more. Well, like, what about, like, Wesley Matthews? You can throw him in that basket, too. Those guys didn't shoot all that great from the floor. George Hill came into the game as the NBA's best three-point shooter, and he was 0-for-4 on threes. Sterling Brown, I think he did some good things, but there were definitely some noticeable not great things. He didn't shoot very well. He had the layup with, just under 5 seconds left, where, yes, like, he got the offensive rebound, which was huge. It gave the Bucks life. They're down by three, but he immediately tried to put it back up, and he thought he had a clear shot. He saw the rim. He didn't see Kristaps Porzingis. He goes to put it up, and, Kristaps, blocked it off Sterling and out of bounds, and that's the game. That's going to kind of stick with people a little bit. Ersan Ilyasova had, 11 points. 4 of 11 shooting, not stellar. A couple turnovers. You just go up and down the roster. There just weren't consistent enough contributions, and there weren't guys who were able to do that offensively. And then defensively, the Bucks tried to stick with their regular kind of like drop coverage, where against pick and rolls, Brook Lopez will sink back toward the rim, really try and defend the paint. Well, the Mavs were like, yeah, that's fine. We have a whole bunch of 3-point shooters on the court at all times, basically in any lineup, and that's not going to work. The Mavs shot 8 of 17 in the first quarter alone, and they were up 13 heading into the second. That matched like the largest deficit the Bucks have had, since November 8th, which also happened to be the last time they lost. So then they started to switch it up. They, no pun intended, they were switching more after that on defense. They were getting beat off the dribble. Seth Curry was getting inside in addition to shooting threes. Like, he was hitting floaters. He was getting layups. Guys were getting to the rim by beating their man off the dribble, and there wasn't enough help behind. The Bucks just, in all facets of the game, just didn't look like themselves. They didn't look very good. Obviously, the one point that multiple people made after the game, including Mike Budenholzer and Giannis Antetokounmpo, was that Dallas had the best offense in the league heading into this game. And yes, Luka Doncic was a huge part of that, in the sense that he ranks really high in the league in amount of time he touches the ball per game, amount of passes he makes, just how much he orchestrates. But the Mavs also, in their limited time without Luka on the court, they still have a great offensive rating. They're still a very good offensive team. I think it might even be a better offensive rating without him on the court, as long as Kristaps Porzingis is out there. So they have a pretty dynamic offense, and that was certainly on display on Monday night. It was very impressive from them, especially in a game where a lot of people figured, okay, Luka's out, they won't be very good, and they were very, very good.
The four losses the Bucks have had this year, some of them have been pretty much in hand in the final seconds. Like, I think you could say this one was, but all of them have had their moments. You had the final stretch where the Bucks almost, came all the way back on Dallas. Miami ended up being an overtime game where the Bucks had a huge lead. Boston, they had lost a big lead, and Utah was at the buzzer. So they truly haven't been blown out or really beaten handily. This is probably the closest to that. One of the things you hear a lot of guys saying afterwards, and maybe this is just a thing that people say, well, we're not even playing at our best yet. We don't feel like we've clicked, so to speak, except for maybe, I think it was George Hill or somebody who said maybe just one or two games, three or four games in this stretch of 18. But, I do buy that, and you mentioned Kyle Korver specifically as a guy who has struggled, but Sterling Brown, I don't know if we've necessarily seen the best version of him. There's been some erratic up and down play from some of the regulars. Brook Lopez is at some point we probably have to start being a little concerned that Brook Lopez is just not going to be the guy he was last year. But so as you look at that, is that cause for optimism? Because hey, this team is they won 18 games in a row and they're not even at their top gear. Imagine what they're going to be like at the end of the season. Or have we gotten to the point where it's like, okay, this team is going to have to scrap a little bit more than last year's team. We can't say this team is going to hit another gear because for whatever reason, something might just be missing. I mean, how do you sort of evaluate that?
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting, talking to guys after the game and, George Hill saying that he only thought that in the 18 game win streak, there were like two or three games they played well. That's not something you would expect. And then Kyle Korver, he was like, hey, you know what? Like, no one remembers the first half of the season. Like, all you're trying to do is, like, get better, build habits, and be your best at the end. Like, we got better. We're playing better now. He's like, well, not tonight. But in general, like, look at the start of the streak to the end of the streak. Like, they've improved. But they're still not playing their best basketball. And then I think that is a prevailing attitude in the locker room. Giannis, he said that, this is good, that they need to learn how to lose together, and they need to learn how to grow from losses and all that fun stuff. But there are some causes for concern, like you mentioned. Like, I don't know if we can yet be or should yet be worried about Brook Lopez, but we're getting closer to that time. Like, he on offense just hasn't been able to get anything going in a bunch of games. Like, recently, in the couple games before this, I think he was a little bit better. He shot the three ball a little bit better. But Monday, I mean, they tried pretty hard to get him going early, and he was 0 for 4, like in the snap of your fingers. He had good looks. I mean, he was getting inside. He was getting to where he wanted to be. Balls just rolling off the rim, just bouncing away. He's getting offensive rebounds, and the putbacks don't go. It's kind of weird. Like, we didn't see these kinds of extended slumps from him last season, that's for sure. And I think that there is definitely an avenue for him to get back to what he was. I think he's getting similar shots. And yes, teams are more prepared for his three-point shooting and are trying to run him off the three-point line a little bit more and maybe paying a little bit more attention to him. So maybe he's thinking too much, like, okay, like, should I roll? Should I pop? Like, he's trying to roll more. Is it harder for him to get into a flow or to get to, like, the exact spots he wants? I'm not sure. But I think that overall, like, he is getting open looks. And I think there have been times where, definitely on Monday night, where he's catching passes in spots where he might normally shoot from, and he's not shooting because, there's just that confidence is wavering right now. And so he needs to be able to get that back, get some good open in-rhythm shots, knock them down. Because, outside of games like Monday where, that defensive scheme that they normally use wasn't working, I think that he's been incredibly important to their defense. He's contested more shots than anybody in the NBA. They rely on him a lot to be the anchor of their defense. And so he's someone who they want to have on the court. Now they just need to be able to kind of marry up his great defense with some quality offense on a consistent basis. And you mentioned Sterling Brown. He hasn't always gotten a ton of minutes. Like I said, he didn't always look great last night, but after the game, Bud kind of, he praised him. He thought there were a bunch of things that Sterling did that necessarily don't show up on the box score. He thought his rebounding was important. And he leaned on him for, a bunch of minutes in that game. I think it was like 22 or 23. And he was minus 4 in that time. I think almost every buck was minus except for Dante DiVincenzo and Kyle Korver. But I think that Sterling is someone who, is still trying to kind of get into a rhythm on both ends. Obviously, he brings some toughness and some rebounding from the wing position, which is vitally important. I think his defensive rebounding numbers are like in the 100th percentile. Just like when he's out there. So there is value. There's good stuff that he brings. But like you said, I still don't think we've seen the best out of him. Wesley Matthews still has room to grow. He's shooting 38% from three. He's really picked it up there. But you still have the feeling like, okay, there could be a little bit more to his game and the way that he contributes. Dante DiVincenzo is now growing into this new point guard role that he has, where he's starting in the place of Eric Bledsoe. And so I think the Bucks as a team are trying to figure that out because, Bledsoe brings just kind of that aggressiveness, that driving force that I don't know that many other guys on the team either have or at least are showing. With the ability to break down the defense off the dribble to create shots for themselves or for their teammates. And so how is the offense going to look with Dante in there? And how exactly does that shake out? They're able to figure that out against the Cleveland Cavaliers, but that's the Cavs. Like, they're not good. When you play a really good team like the Mavericks, like, some of those flaws are going to get exposed. Now with the Lakers coming in, on Thursday, the Bucks have, a couple days between games to try and figure out, what they can learn from Monday's loss, how they can better fit together, how they can better work together. They only have 2 days to do that because, the Lakers, like I said, they're coming in and that's going to be a huge test for this team.
Yeah, obviously, we want to talk here about the Lakers game, but before we leave, talking about Bledsoe, he's been injured since we last had a podcast, and they've played a couple games now without him, and you've kind of mentioned how the shape of things look without him, but I wonder, he might be a bigger loss than I think Bucks fans realize, and not to downplay losing Chris Middleton earlier in the year, but it seems like, obviously, the Bucks won all the games without him. There was a plan B without him. And there is a plan B without Eric Bledsoe. You just mentioned DiVincenzo, Sterling Brown are part of that equation. But I don't know if we realize how valuable he is. I don't know. Does it feel similar to the Middleton injury where they have the options and they should be able to cover for it no problem? Or does it feel like they now are missing something with Bledsoe on the sideline?
You know, I think that the Bledsoe injury is a big one. He is harder to replace than Chris Middleton is, and I don't think that's a slight against Chris Middleton. I just think it's a function of how this Bucks roster is built. They don't have a glut of backup point guard options. Like, yes, like Giannis can run the offense, and Chris Middleton can run the offense, and Dante DiVincenzo can run the offense. But in terms of, like, you know, traditional looking point guards, they have Eric Bledsoe, they have George Hill, end of story. Like, you can add in Frank Mason III at one of their two-way players, but he hasn't figured into this season very much. He's played all of like 13 minutes. So, you know, but when you look at, you know, the Middleton injury, you know, the Bucks have like almost an endless number of wings that they could throw in there. I mean, you can include Dante DiVincenzo in there. You have Sterling Brown. You have Pat Connaughton. You have Kyle Korver. If you want to go deeper in the bench, you have Thanasis Adetokounmpo. Like, you have like all those guys you can kind of plug and play, and they can play off ball, and they can, you know, be kind of more in natural positions for themselves. Right now, like, the Bucks don't necessarily have those natural positions. Like, Dante DiVincenzo, he has the, you know, the size and the ability to defend opposing point guards, but, you know, it's very different in terms of how the Bucks are going to look on both ends of the court, really. You know, DiVincenzo has been a really good defender, getting in passing lanes, deflecting balls, making steals, all that kind of stuff, but he's not necessarily as quick or kind of as heady as Bledsoe, who was a first-team all-defense guy last year, who was able to really set the tone at the front of the Bucks defense, get around screens, contest from behind, make things difficult with his physical abilities on opposing guards. And so, you know, Dante has his own style, but we'll have to see, you know, over time how that integrates into the Bucks defense, you know, as a replacement for Bledsoe. You know, on offense, we saw a lot more of Chris Middleton running the offense, of Giannis running the offense. And, you know, there's going to be an adjustment. I think a lot of times Giannis called his own number, which is a great number to call, you know, on the way to 48 points. And he was able to really get going, especially in that second half. And there were also times where he was kicking out to guys and they just weren't making shots. But so I think the offensive flow is kind of in flux. And it'll be important to see how the Bucks are able to respond over a, you know, pretty difficult stretch. Obviously, they had the Mavericks on Monday, Lakers on Thursday. They'll have the Indiana Pacers on Sunday with a game against the Knicks before that, which I don't think anybody should be too worried about. And then Christmas in Philly. I mean, that's a difficult stretch, all of which could come without Eric Bledsoe.
Yeah, and even though traveling to New York shouldn't be too difficult on paper, the back-to-back concept, you know, you got a game Thursday against the other best team in the NBA, you fly out to New York Saturday, you're back home Sunday to face a Pacers team that is not chopped liver. So it is, like you said, it's a tough little stretch they have. This Thursday night game at Pfizer Forum against the Los Angeles Lakers, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, a team that has a better record than the Milwaukee Bucks. And I know that there's going to be a lot of intrigue here no matter what. I think it's pretty clear that you're going to lose a little bit of the momentum having lost this winning streak. If they had beaten the Mavericks, this would have been, they'd have been going for a franchise record tying 20th win in a row. It's the one time this year that Bucks fans get to see the Lakers in action. Last year was kind of a dud when LeBron didn't even play. The Lakers were a non-factor, but this year is a very different story. What are you expecting the arena is going to be like? Do you feel like that we've lost sort of the shine a little bit because this winning streak is over, or do you envision this going to be one of the more, you know, one of the more entertaining, one of the more energetic, you know, regular season games we'll see this season?
Yeah, I think no matter what, even though the streak is done, I think this will be, you know, an electric crowd, a lot of excitement for this game. There's going to be some Lakers fans in the building, or at least some LeBron fans in the building. That's just what happens when the Lakers go anywhere, when LeBron goes anywhere. I think it's going to feel like a playoff game. It's on TNT. You know, you've got Giannis, you've got LeBron, you've got Anthony Davis. You've got the two teams that are atop the NBA. We're recording this before the Lakers play the Pacers on Tuesday night, but you know, if they're able to win that game, which, you know, that's a tough game, you know, in Indiana, I guess a team that will certainly be motivated. But if the Lakers are able to win that game, you know, they'll enter Thursday's matchup with the Bucks at 25-3. The Bucks will be 24-4. If the Lakers lose, they'll both be 24-4. And so, no matter what, like this is best of the East versus best of the West, and you know, the Bucks will certainly be motivated in that game. You know, they spoke a lot last year, and it definitely hasn't changed, that they don't like to lose two games in a row, that they don't want to lose two games in a row. So, you know, everything that happened on Monday, I think will be a tool that they use to figure out how to improve and make things better for Thursday. And that'll be a really tough test. I mean, LeBron plus AD has been a scary combination. I've seen, you know, some passes and alley-oops and some finishes that just, I feel like no two other players on the planet could make work, but those guys can. And, you know, after the game on Monday, Giannis was asked like what makes the Lakers like such a good team or so fearsome or whatever the exact phrasing was. And he was like, they have two of the best five players in the world. like that was it. Like, of course, like that's just what it is. And so seeing how the Bucks decide to handle those guys, you know, who does Giannis guard? Is he on LeBron? Is he on AD? You know, how much is Brook Lopez able to play? Last year, I remember in LA when the Bucks beat the Lakers at Staples Center, it was a big Ersan Ilyasova night. You know, he spent a lot of the second half guarding LeBron James, and you know, he did all right, and that allowed Giannis to roam a little bit. But at the same time, they didn't have Anthony Davis. They didn't have as good of a team. And so now if they decide to go basically LeBron at the three, AD at the four, and then Dwight Howard at the five, I mean, I guess then you put Brooke on Dwight, and since he doesn't shoot all that much, you're able to kind of keep Brooke in the paint. But then you have Giannis on either LeBron or AD, and then you got to put, I guess, Middleton on the other one. And so that's going to be a very difficult defensive matchup for the Bucks. They might have to go bigger. It might have to be kind of a night where Ersan plays the four, Giannis plays the three, Middleton moves up to the two. There's going to be some definite challenges, but I think it'll be fun to watch it play out and see how each team reacts to the other. And I'm expecting that, you know, with the Bucks coming off a loss, we're going to see a fun game on Thursday night.
Lakers in an outrageous stretch of 8 out of 9 games on the road that will end with the game in Milwaukee. The last few games out, they've been tested. They beat the Magic by single digits. They barely beat the Heat in a game that Miami probably could have won. They then really struggled with the Hawks on Sunday. And again, they're in a crazy stretch of road games. They're winning all these games, but you know, like Milwaukee, it hasn't been a cakewalk every single time out. So I think, especially given that they're going to go play Indiana on, you know, as we record this on Tuesday night, they're going to be weary a little bit. So you would probably still think the Bucks are, you know, being at home, they're the favorite here, even as good as the Lakers are. As good as the Lakers are, you kind of maybe alluded to this, but is there a question mark you still have? Because here's an opportunity now for the Bucks to play two potential NBA Finals opponents in back-to-back games, Dallas and then the Lakers. Obviously, the Lakers right now are the favorite, I suppose, the leader of the West. Is there something that you really think that you want to see that you're not convinced the Bucks how they would handle it necessarily if they were to face one of these top teams in the West in the NBA Finals? Or is it still an incomplete puzzle? Because with no Eric Bledsoe, you're not going to see, in theory, the team that's going to play in the NBA Finals at the end of the year.
Yeah, I think without Bledsoe, it definitely changes the dynamic of this matchup. Makes it harder to kind of put as much stock into this game. And obviously, you know, playoff Giannis, playoff LeBron, and playoff Bucks, playoff Lakers would be very different, especially if they're meeting in the finals. But I think the big thing is that, you know, in general, and this goes back to what we were talking about with the Mavericks game, like we need to see more output from the Bucks role players. I think we know that no matter what, come hell or high water, Giannis is going to get his. Like, that's just what he does. You know, we haven't talked since last week, but, like, you know, you look at Friday's game where the Bucks didn't play well in Memphis, and Jaren Jackson Jr. was going absolutely bonkers, like shooting all kinds of crazy threes and making them, and the Bucks were down 10 in that game. And Giannis was kind of just like, all right, forget it. Like, I got this. And he played 26 minutes, and he scored 37 points. He was, like, plus 26 in, like, 26 minutes. And that's normal for him. Like, that's just what he does. You know, putting up 48 points and 14 rebounds. Yeah, some of it were at the end. Like, he had 42 points when he checked out in the fourth quarter before they went on that crazy run to actually make it close. But, like, that's just what he does. He's going to get his. And, like, so the Bucks need to figure out how to consistently get other players involved and to get them into a rhythm and to get them the looks they want and they need in order to be successful, you know, because Giannis can't do it alone. And for a lot of the 18-game win streak, he wasn't. Like, one game it would be Chris Middleton who would be right there with him. Probably for a bunch of games it was. Some games it was Eric Bledsoe. Some games it was George Hill. Some games, you know, it would be Dante DiVincenzo. You know, out of nowhere, Brook Lopez would have a good game. Ersan Ilyasova would step up. So, like, finding multiple guys to step up in a game and to do it early, they don't, you know, it's not good when they're getting in holes and having to really claw their way out. That generally just means Giannis comes in the third quarter and goes on a rampage. But then, like, the hard part is they have to sustain that, you know, because he'll come out, he'll go, you know, max effort for the first 5 or 6 minutes of the third quarter. Then he'll go take a rest. And they have to figure out how to sustain that. So I think it's all about the supporting cast and making sure that they're able to be consistent and effective, particularly on offense, but on both ends, really.
Last thought before we get out of here. Again, that Lakers game will be at 7 o'clock p.m. Central Time, Thursday night, Pfizer Forum. It's going to be nationally televised. It's going to be a happening. The Bucks are coming off an 18-game winning streak. It will not be intact when they get into that game, but it should be a ton of fun. What do you expect the reception will be for Malcolm Brogdon the game after that when the Indiana Pacers come to town? They've played on the road. Brogdon didn't play in that game. I assume it'll be positive, but sometimes Milwaukee fans throw me a curveball. I mean, it is out there that, you know, not that Malcolm Brogdon actively wanted out of Milwaukee or anything, but, you know, he wasn't necessarily saying all I wanted to do is stay in Milwaukee. He was, you know, looking forward to an opportunity elsewhere. I don't know. How do you think fans will react when Malcolm Brogdon is introduced with the Pacers in that game? What's that, Friday night or Saturday night? I've already forgotten.
Well, that's on Sunday.
Sunday night. Yeah. Saturday in New York, Sunday at against the Pacers.
Yeah, I think fans will cheer for Malcolm when he is introduced, and they will boo him after that.
Yes.
So once the game starts, all allegiances, all fuzzy, warm feelings from the past few years will go away. And until, I'm assuming, there will be a tribute video. My guess would be it'd be between, like, the first quarter and the second quarter, maybe sometime in the first, maybe the first or second time out in the first quarter. They'll do a tribute video, and they'll show him winning Rookie of the Year and making, like, big shots against the Raptors and, you know, helping out in the community and, like, just doing all the things that he did while he's in Milwaukee. I would assume so. I think it'd be a nice gesture by the Bucks, and people will appreciate him during that time. But, you know, when he makes one of those, like, you know, quintessential Malcolm Brogdon, like, reverse layups, like, They're gonna groan. They're gonna boo. If someone blocks one of his shots, the fans are going to cheer a lot more than they than if they had blocked like a Domantas Sabonis shot. It's just going to be how it is, and I think that, you know, if that's how it goes down, if they kind of give Malcolm his due during player intros, during a tribute video, and then boo him for, like, during the game, like any other like visiting player, I think that's totally fine. I think that'd be the right way to handle it. I think he gave a lot to the Bucks in the time that he was in Milwaukee, both on the court and off. He was a pivotal member of last year's team, and obviously the teams before it, but last year's, like, you know, historically good Bucks team. And he really gave it his all. And he, you know, like I said, he was very involved in the community, tried to, you know, get involved as much as he could. So I think it'll be fun to see him on the court. I haven't seen him in person this year since he missed that game in Indiana. And so getting to see him go against his former Bucks teammates should be a good time.
He is Matt Velasquez, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering the Milwaukee Bucks. He'll be there on Thursday. I'll be there on Thursday. We're going to have a party. It's going to be a fun time watching the Lakers in town, the Pacers after that, the Knicks, you know, in between, if that's your thing, at Madison Square Garden. And then we'll have another podcast, I believe, before Christmas Day in when the Bucks travel to Philadelphia to face the 76ers for the first time this season. I know I was talking about the NBA Finals. I know that's cart before the horse. The Sixers possibly still the team to beat, the Bucks' top competition in the Eastern Conference. Maybe not in the standings, but I know some people still see that matchup as an Eastern Conference Finals preview. So that will be exciting as well. Matt, thanks for joining us. We will chat with you again next week.
Absolutely. Can't wait to see you on Thursday night.
Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Leave us a note. Leave us a rating and review. Those are huge for us. Please do it. Rate us. Review us. Please. Just do it. Do it now. Or find us on Twitter. I'm at JR Radcliffe. That's Radcliffe with an E on the end. He's Matt_Velasquez. Find him. Chat with him. Tell him how much you love him. And we will hear from him next week. Find everything he has to write as well at jsonline.com. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you again soon.